Let's take a look at the undeniable truth behind Donald Trump's tariffs and why many people in Western countries don't understand the real issues. China and Thailand have policies that are targeting foreign companies from the highest levels of government that are much more restrictive than the equivalent policies in Western countries. Let's say a U.S. company wants to set up a factory in China. The U.S. company will have to partner with a Chinese company, most likely connected to the government, and won't be able to own a majority stake in their own factory. The Chinese partner will make sure that the U.S. technology used in the manufacturing process and/or final product is transferred to them. But if a U.S. company wants to set up shop, wants to set up shop in the United States, they can own everything outright, and the U.S. government doesn't interfere. So why aren't the rules the same? Trade policy should be equal, and Asia has gotten away with unfair policies for far too long. Why isn't there a backlash or boycott of companies like GM that willingly give China their intellectual property in return for access to Chinese markets, cheap labor, and short-term profits? China is now manufacturing cars that look just like GM's, but they are probably higher quality. And why didn't American consumers punish Apple when it appeased the Chinese government by removing VPNs from the App Store, or when it moved iCloud encryption keys from the United States to China? VPNs are the only way average citizens can access uncensored information outside of China. Former Apple security employees have criticized moving the encryption keys to such a repressive regime. It's no surprise the only backlash by U.S. consumers and the media is against higher prices. They defend cheap prices for consumer goods while being blind to the reality of what's really going on. To rally public opinion, all the media has to say is prices will go up, and everybody follows along. The average consumer doesn't care about insignificant things such as the transfer of U.S. technology or the abuses that happen. Let's see what those consumers say when the race to the bottom hits them. You know, something has to be done when even CNN reports that China steals up to $600 billion of American intellectual property every year. Not that I'm a Steve Bannon fan, but he's right when he says Wall Street and U.S. corporations willingly give in to and appease China for their own short-term profits. If Wall Street can't police itself, and when has it ever been able to, because it's blinded by profit, the government needs to act, even if tariffs are unpopular. When J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, a former Democrat, is assuming on Wall Street and says that tariffs and non-tariff barriers to trade are often not fair, intellectual property is frequently stolen, and the rights to invest in and own companies in some countries, in many cases, are not equal. When the United States administration talks about free and fair, it essentially means the same on all counts. This is not what has existed. It's not unreasonable for the United States to press ahead for more fairness in trade. Of course, CNBC's Cramer makes it into a political issue rather than looking objectively at the facts. Did Cramer and friends have an intellectual debate on the pros and cons of some of the possible solutions that Dimon presented in his 40-page letter to shareholders? You already know the answer. They just belittled him and talked about when he's going to step down. Unfortunately, that's about all anyone is going to get from the mainstream media on tariffs. Recently, a former deputy U.S. trade representative under Obama said that China is the biggest trade cheater and the tariffs are a good start to deal with the problem. So the question is, why didn't the Obama administration impose those tariffs when they were well aware of the problem? because they did not want to do something unpopular right before a difficult election. Obama could not risk upsetting his powerful globalization supporters along with every trade ally the United States has. 4-year terms are so short compared to economic cycles that governments mainly focus on policies that are popular with their voters, while the opposition attempts to block everything, rather than everyone doing what actually needs to be done, doing what is right. Just like in everyday lives, something that's good for you probably isn't very much fun or healthy and could even be painful. Obama's government was paralyzed and could not do what needed to be done because getting reelected was more important than doing what's right. I'm assuming that no one in their right mind would say that giving away U.S. intellectual property to China just to manufacture goods there cheaply is the right thing to do. If the previous government had a much longer term, they would have been able to do what's right and impose tariffs without worrying about getting reelected in a few years. It's only when free trade went too far and became an emotional issue that people voted for change. That change was Donald Trump. Obama's inaction is also no surprise when you realize the enormous pressure governments are under to keep the economy booming. If a period of full employment, low inflation, and low interest rates is not a good time to endure the pain of a necessary trade war to correct trade imbalances and intellectual property theft, when is the best time? When we're in a recession and millions are out of work? Or should we continue to ignore those economically lethal problems like Obama did? Instead of saying, "Don't screw up the economy in the short term," we should rather say, "Don't screw up the entire country in the long term." Is our tunnel vision so myopic that we have to push for more and more growth and cheaper products at all costs, even when we are already in the middle of an unprecedented, synchronized global growth? Right after Trump was elected, the media flooded with pro-globalization articles. It was obvious powerful players were trying to keep the status quo as long as possible. Many of those articles were pre-written and all ready to send out at a moment's notice whenever someone said anything negative about free trade. Other governments are only now starting to agree with Trump. A New York Times article shed some lights on the real situation and also confirms that U.S. officials have long known about Chinese dumping. It turns out that China was dumping steel and aluminum into the United States through Canada and the EU by using a process called transshipping. That's a very different tune from all the articles that came out when Trump's tariffs were first announced. Originally, all the major media sources were saying how Canada and the EU are going to be severely affected by a trade war with the United States. But now that the dust has settled and the truth has come out, everything Trump said about Chinese dumping is true, and now Canada and the EU are working on ways to stop cheap Chinese imports that are actually destined for the United States. In fact, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was even warned about his own safeguards that Canada could be a victim of Chinese dumpings now that the U.S. is limiting Chinese imports. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do wonder why it took so long for the truth to come out. Chinese President Xi announced China is committed to opening its economy and will protect the intellectual property of foreign enterprises. He also talked about globalization being inclusive, balanced, and beneficial to all. He referred to China as the benevolent leader of the global economy, which is a complete reversal of their previous policies. Now, how much of his speech is just lip service? That needs to be seen, but it appears that China has acknowledged the reasons behind Trump's tariffs and is willing to concede on the most important issues. Time will tell, though, because intellectual property enforcement is a gray area in Asia, with crackdowns on counterfeit goods often being just for show. Government policy and what actually happens on the ground can be two different things. But these trade talks are going in the right direction. Cooler heads will prevail, I believe, and a global trade war will be prevented as long as Xi's speech becomes reality. After a whirlwind of talks in Washington, the United States and China have both pledged not to engage in an all-out war, although they've been ticking and tacking at one another. China has agreed to significantly increase U.S. imports, although an exact dollar figure hasn't been released. Over the past few months, Trump has brought China to the negotiating table by fighting fire with fire, which is the only thing that China responds to. When Trump first announced tariffs, China retaliated by slapping its own tariffs on U.S. soybeans in an attempt to hurt Trump's core supporters. In a move whose purpose was cleverly disguised, the United States blocked Chinese phone manufacturer ZTE from using American components for 7 years for violating trade sanctions against Iran. That effectively put ZTE out of business and 70,000 Chinese people out of work. A week later, China removed tariffs on soybeans and came to Washington to offer concessions. A lot of people in the media have been critical of Trump's tariffs and foreign policy. Trump is often seen as unstable and inconsistent because of his rants on Twitter. What people don't see is the big picture. Trump is so unorthodox compared to other politicians with his back-and-forth negotiating tactics and direct communication style, many people take the easy road and lash out when they don't understand what's going on behind the scenes. And what people also don't realize is that many countries such as China only offer concessions when they are threatened. If China is not fearful, they will continue to take advantage of their trade partners indefinitely. The same approach is needed on North Korea. Now, the words fake news are bandied about and denied by a highly liberal media. Average ordinary Americans are at the mercy of social media, network, and cable television, and the major networks, major newspapers. Journalism, a once proud profession, has evolved into a propaganda machine. We used to believe that if we saw or heard something on television or in the newspaper, it was the truth. There was a time when that was true, but not today. My research for today's commentary was aided by Daniel Payne of The Federalist. I draw on numerous sources to find the truth and feel comfortable passing it on to you. I verify, though, before I pass it along. In my commentaries, you will always receive the unbiased truth. So where is the proof of fake news? Since at least Donald Trump's election, our media have been in the grip of an astonishing self-inflicted crisis. Despite Trump's constant railing against the American press, there is no greater enemy of the American media than the American media itself. They did this to themselves. It's difficult to adequately sum up the breadth of this epidemic, chiefly because it keeps right on growing. Day after day, even hour after hour, the media continues to broadcast, spread, promulgate, publicize, and promote fake news on an industrial scale. It has become a regular part of our news cycle, not distinct from our extraneous to it, but a part of it. Embedded within the news apparatus, as a spoke is embedded in a bicycle wheel. Whenever you turn on a news station, visit a news website, or follow Twitter or other social media, there is an excellent chance that you're going to be exposed to fake news. It is rapidly becoming an accepted part of the way the American media are run. So, how we will get out of this is anybody's guess. We might not get out of it, at least as long as Trump is president of the United States. We may be up for 4 or 8 long years of fake news media hysteria. It is worth giving you some examples of fake news hysteria so far. Only when we fully access the extent of the media's collapse into ineptitude can we truly begin to reckon with it. Since Trump's election, here's just a sampling of their fake news. After Trump's electoral victory on November 8, 2016, rumors began circulating that multiple transgender teenagers had killed themselves in response to the election results. There was no proof or basis for those rumors. Nobody was able to confirm them at the time, and nobody has been able to confirm them in the nearly 2 years since Trump was elected. Nevertheless, that false claim spread far and wide. The stories hyping this rumor garnered at least 100,000 shares on Facebook alone, contributing to the fear and hysteria surrounding the Trump victory. To add to the hysteria, Gabriel Sherman posted a bombshell report on New York Magazine's pages claiming that a group of prominent computer scientists and election lawyers were demanding a recount in 3 separate states because of persuasive evidence that the election results in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania may have been manipulated or hacked. Where was the evidence? Apparently, in Wisconsin, Clinton received 7% fewer votes in counties that relied on electronic voting machines compared with counties that used official scanners and paper ballots. That story went viral. It was shared more than 145,000 times on Facebook alone. Liberal Politico's Eric Geller shared the bogus story on Twitter as well. Liberal New York Times columnist Paul Krueger also shared that story and was retweeted about 1,600 times. It wasn't until the next day that someone threw a little water on the fire. It was shown that it was explained that demographics, not hacking, had caused the curious voting numbers. At that point, however, the damage had already been done to delegitimize the 2016 election results. This is how fake news works. The fake news always goes viral, spreading like wildfire, while nobody hears or reads about any corrections. Politico is a far-left-leaning organization, and their writer, Lorraine Wallert, published a shocking essay claiming that Trump's pick for the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, had overseen a company that foreclosed on a 90-year-old woman after a 27-cent payment error. That story received widespread coverage, being shared nearly 17,000 times on Facebook alone. The New York Times' Stephen Ratner shared it on Twitter, as did NBC News' Brad Jaffe. But there was a problem. The central, scandalous claims of Wallert's article were simply not true. The woman in question was never foreclosed on and never lost her home. Moreover, it was not even Mnuchin's bank that brought the suit in the first place. Politico eventually corrected these serious and glaring errors, but the damage had already been done. The fake story had been repeated by numerous media outlets, including the Huffington Post, the New York Times, Vanity Fair, Facebook, and many others. On the day of Donald Trump's inauguration, CNN claimed Nancy Sinatra was not happy with the fact that the president and the First Lady's inaugural dance would be to the tune of Frank Sinatra's My Way. But Nancy Sinatra had never said any such thing. CNN later updated the article without apologizing or explaining the mistake they had made. Also on the day of Trump's inauguration, New York Times writer Coral Davenport published an article on the Times website whose headline proclaimed that the Trump administration had purged any climate change references from the White House website. Within that article, Davenport acknowledged that the so-called purge was not unexpected, but rather part of a routine turnover of digital authority between the ingoing and incoming administrations. To call this action a purge was thus at the height of intellectual dishonesty. The Times article was styling the whole thing as a kind of digital book burning rather than a routine part of the American government done by every incoming administration. But of course, there was surely the point, more piling on Trump's reputation during his first days in Washington. Now, taking any of these things individually doesn't do that much harm, but when the negativity is combined, it sways public opinion against the president. Next, Time magazine reporter Zeke Miller wrote that a bust of Martin Luther King Jr. had been removed from the White House. This caused a flurry of controversy on social media until Miller was forced to issue a correction. Miller had apparently not even asked anyone in the White House if the King bust had been removed before spreading his fake news. This was surely intended to inflame Black America. There was no such outcry when Barack Hussein Obama ceremoniously removed the bust of Winston Churchill from the White House. And in an action sure to hurt U.S.-Great Britain relations, had the Churchill bust sent back to England. Obama considered Churchill to be a colonialist, and his Kenyan roots would not allow him to leave the Churchill bust anywhere near the White House. What Obama did was not on behalf of the American people, but an action arising out of his personal feelings and his Kenyan heritage. And during her confirmation hearing, Education Secretary nominee Betsy DeVos was asked whether schools should be able to have guns on their campuses. As NBC News reported, DeVos felt it was best left to locales and states to decide. She pointed out that one school in Wyoming had a fence around it to protect students from wildlife. She said that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzly bears. This was a non-controversial stance to take. DeVos was simply pointing out that different states and localities have different needs, and attempting to mandate a nationwide one-size-fits-all policy for every American school makes no sense. So how did the fake news media run with it? By lying through their teeth. Among other asinine comments was CNN, who said that Betsy DeVos said that guns in schools may be necessary to protect students from grizzly bears. The website Daily Beast said that Betsy DeVos had said that schools may need guns to fight off bears. The intellectual dishonesty at play here is hard to overstate. DeVos never said or implied that every American school, or even many of them, might need to shoot bears. Rather than report accurately on her stance, these media outlets created a fake news event to smear a reasonable woman's perfectly reasonable opinion. On January 26, 2017, The Washington Post's Josh Rogan published what seemed to be a bombshell report declaring that the State Department's entire senior management team had just resigned. The biased story immediately went sky-high viral. It was shared nearly 60,000 times on Facebook alone. Rogan himself tweeted the story out and was retweeted a staggering 11,000 times. Washington Post columnist Ann Applebaum had it retweeted nearly 2,000 times. The fake piece was highly misleading. The word management strongly implied that all of America's top diplomats were resigning. That was not the case. The truth is that it's standard with every outgoing administration, in coordination with the incoming one, to request all politically appointed officers submit letters of resignation. CNN piled on. The entire premise of Rogan's article was essentially non-existent. Democrats and their fake news allies have attacked Trump by sexual innuendo about the size of his hands. Observer writer Dana Swartz tweeted out a screenshot of Trump that in her eyes proved that President Trump had photoshopped his hands bigger for a White House photograph. Her nasty tweet immediately went viral, being shared upwards of 25,000 times. A similar tweet by Disney animator Joaquin Baldwin was shared nearly 9,000 times. Disney owns NBC, one of the most obviously biased networks on the air. This hand conspiracy was eventually proven untrue, but not before being shared thousands and thousands of times. The very idea that Democrats and the fake news media want to focus on the size of Trump's hands and the seedy claims of a porno actress give rise to the question of whether or not these people are normal. I don't recall any Republican or conservative fixating on the size of Obama's hands. Leading up to Trump announcing his first Supreme Court nomination, CNN senior White House correspondent Jeff Zalini announced that the White House was setting up the Supreme Court announcement as a primetime contest. He pointed to a pair of recently created identical Twitter pages for theoretical justices Neil Gorsuch and Thomas Hardiman, the two likely nominees at that time. Salini's sneering tweet clearly meant to cast the Trump administration in an unflattering, circus-like light, and it was shared more than 1,100 times on Twitter. Shortly thereafter, CNN's Salini had to reverse himself with a tweet that said, "The Twitter accounts were not set up by the White House. I've been told," he said. As always, the admission of mistake was shared far less than the original fake news. CNN's Salini's correction was retweeted a paltry 159 times. The media reported that a business owner in Detroit, who flew to Iraq to bring his mother back home to the U.S. for medical treatment, said that she was blocked from returning home under President Trump's ban on immigration and travel from 7 predominantly Muslim countries. Like most sensational news incidents, this one took off big time. It was shared on Facebook more than 123,000 times and echoed on other liberal outlets. There was just one problem. It was fake news. The man had lied about when his mother died. The media didn't bother to do the necessary research to confirm or disprove the man's account. They desperately want these negative things about Donald Trump to be true, and it blinds them to their bias. At the start of February, Black History Month in the United States, President Trump proclaimed the month to be National African American History Month. The media tried to spin the story in a bizarre way. TMZ claimed that an anonymous senior administration official said that Trump believed the term black to be outdated. Every U.S. president since 1976 has designated February as Black History Month, said TMZ, but wrote the same thing. But that's simply not true. President Barack Obama, for example, declared February National African American History Month as well. Next, the Associated Press kicked off a political and media firestorm by reporting that the House had voted to roll back the Obama rule on background checks for gun ownership. That fake news was retweeted a staggering 12,000 times. All of this is an attempt to relitigate the 2016 election. The liberal mainstream media and their Democratic allies simply will not accept the will of the American people in putting Donald Trump into the White House. They know more than you do. Think of the awful option they gave us. Hillary Clinton, a terribly flawed human being with a background of greed, lies, and corruption. They needed Clinton to succeed Barack Obama so that all of the corruption of Obama's administration could remain covered up. The Obamas and Clintons hated one another, but Obama needed Hillary to win to save his fanny, and she needed the job to save her own fanny, so they made nice-nice before the American people. America said no to Hillary Clinton, and the next 2 years became the quest by Democrats and the fake news media to undermine Trump and try to derail any success he might have had as president. By doing that, they derailed the prosperity of the American people. But regaining power means more to these despots than their own country. Look for this same misinformation and outright lies to continue for the next 2 years. You cannot believe what you see and read and hear in America's mainstream media. Journalism is, in fact, dead in America.